Brother, can I get a lift?
The Marketplace Morning Report is produced in association with the University of Southern California.
From American Public Media in Los Angeles, I'm Scott Jagow. Philadelphia's brotherly love might be tested during this morning's commute. Thousands of city transit workers went on strike at midnight, and that means no buses, no subways, no trolleys. Normally, about 500,000 people take those to work in a city where one in three households doesn't have a car. Philly has set up extra bike racks and parking and is urging people to carpool. Transit workers want better health benefits. Their last strike in 1998 lasted 40 days. Maybe you can't get to work in Philadelphia, but you can fly from Minneapolis to Bangalore. Yesterday, Northwest launched a new flight to India's high-tech hub. American and Continental are also jetting to India soon. Miranda Kennedy tells us why.
India's horizon is expanding thanks to the Open Skies Agreement between the U.S. and India. Now U.S. carriers are flocking to India in time for the peak holiday flying season. They also have their eye on the growing numbers of businessmen making the passage to India. Analyst Kapil Kaul says the trip is the new route of profit-making.
India wants to effectively participate in international trade, whether it's with America, it's with Middle East or with Europe. And there are tremendous external changes happening to India's environment. And if India has any desires to become an economic superpower, India needed those changes.
The new American and Continental flights will dart straight across Europe to cut the flying time down to 13 hours. That'll make India's upcoming markets all the more accessible to U.S. companies trying to get in on the outsourcing boom. In New Delhi, I'm Miranda Kennedy for Marketplace.
Everybody's talking about bird flu these days, but a report out this morning says the plain old flu is going to zap business profits this winter. Challenger Gray and Christmas says the flu could mean 70 million sick days. That'll cost companies about $8 billion. The report has some suggestions, like allowing employees to shop for gifts online during work hours. That way, they'll stay out of those germy shopping malls. I'm sure retailers will love that one. The U.S. beef industry is still feeling the impact of mad cow disease. American beef is banned in two of its biggest markets, Japan and South Korea. But today, Japan issued a report saying U.S. meat is safe and indicated it would likely lift the ban soon. As Lisa Roth reports, Congress is getting antsy.
U.S. senators have introduced a bill that would impose trade sanctions on Japanese imports if Japan doesn't lift the ban by the end of the year. For the beef industry, though, it may all be too little too late, says Morgan Paisley of Aileron Trading.
Now, since it's been so long, like I said, a lot of that business has gone to Australia or gone to other specialty people that have picked that up, whether it be South America or somewhere else.
Paisley says American beef growers have been courting other markets, including the European Union, to try to make up for the loss. Until the ban was imposed in 2003, Japan was one of the biggest buyers of American beef. That year, sales totaled $1 billion. In New York, I'm Elisa Roth for Marketplace.
Wall Street gobbled up stock treats on Friday. The Dow had its biggest one-day gain since April, 172 points. The S&P 500 climbed 18. The Nasdaq was up 26 points to wind up at 2089. This is Marketplace. People who work for the National Institutes of Health need to come clean today. It's the deadline for employees to comply with a new set of financial disclosure rules. Rachel Dornhelm reports.
New rules require NIH employees tell the government if they hold any stocks considered a conflict of interest. The list of suspect stocks includes drug and biotech companies and corporations with medical divisions. That comes to 58,000 companies. Science policy specialist Sheldon Krimsky says the new rule is important because NIH employees sit on panels that can decide a product's fate.
If they have significant stock holdings in a particular area, that could affect their objectivity.
Krimsky says this is only one in a series of ethics changes at NIH. Another recent policy bans NIH scientists from receiving consulting fees on issues related to their government work. I'm Rachel Dornhelm for Marketplace.
You're listening to the Marketplace Morning Report, produced by American Public Media.
Marketplace Morning Report is supported by Toyota, designing vehicles with hybrid synergy drive for fuel efficiency and low emissions. More at Toyota.com. Toyota, moving forward. By Mellon Financial Corporation, helping financially successful individuals and families protect and maximize their assets through the practice of wealth management. Mellon.com. And by The Economist, The weekly publication of international news with commentary and analysis on world politics, business and finance, technology and the arts, on newsstands and at economist.com.
This is Marketplace. I'm Scott Jagow.
And now it's time for the Sloan Sessions.
The Federal Reserve meets tomorrow and once again is expected to boost short-term interest rates a quarter point. After that, Chairman Alan Greenspan only has a couple more meetings before he steps down. In the last few days, there's been a lot of talk about Greenspan's power and legendary status. I asked Newsweek's Alan Sloan whether that's reality or myth.
I think it's myth, and I suspect that if you took Greenspan, whom I call Uncle Alan because he looks like my uncle would look if I had one, I think if you took Uncle Alan out, bought him a couple of beers, and swore yourself to secrecy, and you'd say, hey, Uncle, are you all powerful? He'd say, hell no. Because if you know how the world actually works, you recognize the limitations of the Federal Reserve Board, and you don't buy this myth propagated by the Fed and by people in our business that the Fed is all-knowing, all-powerful, and it cares about us.
But he still has a heck of a lot of influence over the economy, doesn't he?
Well, he has a heck of a lot of influence, but a heck of a lot of influence is not the same thing as being God. And if you look at what's going on in the world and you compare it to what it was like 18 years ago when Uncle Alan ascended to the Fed chairmanship, you see the Fed, relatively speaking, is far less powerful than it used to be.
What happened?
Well, two things happened. Much as people hate to admit it, the United States' financial influence in the world has diminished from what it was. It's still very large. But boy, if you look at the numbers, the central bankers of Asia, they've got a lot of influence now about what happens here because they're the people who are funding our trade and budget deficit. And if you look at the very boring mechanics of how banks work, once upon a time, the Fed could raise short-term rates above a certain level of, say, 4 or 5 or 6%. Money would stop coming into the banks because interest rates were regulated. People wouldn't put money into the banks. They put it into treasury securities or something else instead. So the Fed can control the flow of money into banks and therefore could control lending. But now rates are deregulated. There are all sorts of foreign banks. There are hedge funds that make loans. There's money market mutual funds. So the banks themselves are less important than commercial banks. And the Fed's control over the commercial banks is not what it used to be.
So besides short-term interest rates, what other major power does the Fed have?
Do you hear an answer?
Silence?
That's it. That's the power it has. It has the power of suasion. It has the power of mystique. It has short-term interest rates, and that is all it has.
So we're making a big deal about the next Fed chief for nothing?
I didn't say that. I've never said it's for nothing. I said he's important. I said he matters. What I've said is he's not all-powerful, and neither is the Fed.
Alan Sloan's Wall Street editor for Newsweek. In Los Angeles, I'm Scott Jagow.